Hi, I'm Dr. Yoni Friedhoff. I'm a medical doctor and an assistant professor at the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Ottawa, and I write the Weighty Matters blog. And a little over a month ago, I was invited to give a talk, would have been this past Friday, at a food industry breakfast on health and nutrition policy. I was invited by the Ontario Medical Association to give my thoughts on what the food industry might do to help improve public health. Unfortunately, 3 days before the talk, after, of course, the flights were booked and the hotels were booked and I'd canceled a whole bunch of patients, without the courtesy of a phone call, the food industry disinvited me. And so I thought, well, the internet's a great place. I've got my slides together already. Why don't I put it up there and maybe I'll reach more people than I would have had I been able to come. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what I think the food industry can do. It's actually quite straightforward. Why I don't think they're going to do it, and what we should do about it. And so I guess the easiest way to start is I think the food industry could stop suggesting that fiber and whole grains make sugary cereals a good idea. I think the food industry could stop putting cartoon characters on the front of cereal boxes and paying for stores to put them at eye level for kids. I think the food industry could stop suggesting that cookies are in fact nutritious, in this particular case more nutritious than milk, or that you could get whole grains in Tostitos, and that in turn might be healthful. I think the food industry could stop talking about no sugar being added to things. This particular product, it looks a lot like Twizzlers, it says no sugar added, and yet it has more sugar than actual Twizzlers. It's got 10 times the sugar of apples by weight, if instead you wanted your child to eat an apple. Or this particular fruit product, it's a fruit and vegetable snack. Again, it says it's got no sugar added, yet by weight, 79% of it is sugar. It's not that there's no sugar added, it's just that it gets added from concentrated fruit purees and juices. And I think the food industry could stop being disingenuous about that. I think the food industry could stop suggesting that grape juice is good for you. It says no added sugar ever, yet every single glass has 10.5 teaspoons of the stuff. That's the same amount as you'd get if you drank a quarter glass of maple syrup each and every day. I think the food industry could stop creating products that prey on children and parents. This product by McDonald's called Fruitiz is carbonated fruit juice. It's got more sugar drop per drop than Coca-Cola, and its television advertisements say that it counts towards a child's 5 a day. I think the food industry could stop using words to describe their products that make them sound not too bad. This particular one is the snack size McFlurry. And if you think that a snack would be a Snickers bar dissolved in a can of Coca-Cola, well, then this might be the snack for you because it's got the same number of calories as that Coca-Cola Snickers bar combo, and it's got 15 teaspoons of sugar. I think the food industry could stop adding ground up oat hulls to products, calling it fiber, and suggesting it's beneficial. Fiber coming from whole grains is one thing. Fiber being added to pulverized white flour is quite another. And same with pulverized cauliflower, where this particular product, if you were to buy it, has more sodium, more sugar, and less protein than actual Kraft dinner, and the nutritional equivalent of about a quarter of a serving of cauliflower. Why not just give your kids a quarter of a serving of cauliflower and some actual good food? Well, in part, it might be because you think you don't need to if you buy Kraft Dinner Smart. The food industry could stop suggesting that applesauce is a vegetable. In this particular case, each one of these peach, apple, carrot blends has half the fiber and 1/40th the vitamin A of a single solitary carrot. This product, a breakfast replacement that apparently is good and makes your kid not a zombie, contains 9 3/4 teaspoons of sugar per glass. Give your kid one of these a day for a year, and you'll give them 31 pounds of sugar. I don't think that's good. And really, is there such a calcium emergency that the food industry needs to suggest that if you don't add sweetened syrup containing 3 teaspoons of sugar per serving, that your kid is going to suffer health-wise? That'd be like suggesting if they're not eating apples, you should give them apple pie. And what about DHA? This one, here's the copy. So the big ones read the label on the little one's yogurt, and they saw that the little ones were very smart indeed, which wasn't surprising, because little ones has DHA. Now, I found that surprising because on the label of little ones, it actually says 0 grams of polyunsaturated fats, and DHA is a polyunsaturated fat. But the thing is, if you put minuscule amounts of something into a product, you're not allowed to say it's in the product, and the 25 milligrams per little ones wasn't enough to make the label. What it means is that if your child eats a little ones and that you bought it because you wanted them to get DHA, they will consume the equivalent amount of DHA as they would have if they ate a piece of salmon the size of 1/3 of a pea. And here is Wonder Plus Head Start, food for thought, again, geared towards parents to make them think it's a good plan. If your child eats 214 slices of Wonder Plus Head Start, they will have as much DHA as a single serving of salmon. But you sure wouldn't get that from that ad copy that the food industry could stop making. And for adults, too, here's one that will help nourish your brain, pomegranate blueberry plus DHA. And if you drink 8 liters of this stuff, along with the 5 cups of sugar and the pound of calories, you too will get the equivalent amount of DHA as you would in a single serving of salmon. And if you don't want juice or bread or yogurt, well, you can get basically Oreos with omega-3s in them too. And last, of course, in this cavalcade of wonderful ads is this one. If poutine is part of your routine, try vitamin water. Poutine, if you don't know, is French fries covered with cheese curds and gravy. And this ad suggests, indeed, that somehow this sugar water will confer some protection against poutine's regular consumption. What I think the food industry could do is stop lying. Here's an ad. Can't remember the last Coca-Cola ad targeted at children? There's a reason. And I'll read you the bottom because it's tough to read online. Parents tell us they prefer to be the ones teaching their children about beverage choices. That's why for over 50 years, we've adhered to a company policy that prohibits advertising soft drinks to children. That's awesome. Thanks, Coca-Cola. I guess this comic book ad that says Coca-Cola Classic is always great for good sports is geared towards adults. And that this race put on by Coca-Cola for children, and they do this all over the world, isn't designed to associate the Coca-Cola brand with that kid's happiness and fun. Nor, of course, is this float from the Santa Claus parade. This float isn't designed to associate joy, happiness, Santa with Coca-Cola. At least not to kids. No, this is for adults. And this year, for my wife's birthday, I'm going to buy her a Coca-Cola Barbie, because this couldn't possibly be geared at children, nor could this 100-piece puzzle for ages 5+ be geared towards kids, or this Matchbox car, or this Lego set, or this stuffed cute bear. These are adult toys, because Coca-Cola for 50 years has adhered to a policy of not advertising their beverages to children. You know, I don't really blame the food industry. You might find that surprising, but honest to goodness, I don't. You know, I do think the ads are deceitful. I think they're unethical. I think they're misinformational. I think that the food industry folks who put them out there absolutely know that, but I still don't blame them for doing it, because it's not their job to do anything but try to sell food. They have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to make profits. They have zero responsibility to society to protect health. If you want to know who I blame us. I blame public health officials. I blame governments. Because we could theoretically do something about it. Here's a flood. This is Hurricane Katrina's flooding And what did we do when there was a flood with Hurricane Katrina? We built levees. We stacked sandbags. And as you can see, not every sandbag in this pile is actually doing anything. There are plenty of sandbags just sitting there minding their own business. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't have been stacked. And we do have a flood right now. We have a flood of horrible foods, of misinformational advertising, of predatory marketing. We have a flood of processed foods, even in our homes. Looking at this graph from 1982 to 2002, we've seen the purchase of processed foods and sweets double. We have a flood. We need sandbags. But what we can't do is expect the food industry to fill them for us. We need to level the playing field. In order to do so, we need to set rules for the food industry, regulations for the food industry. Whether it's calorie postings on menus, soda taxes, subsidies for healthier foods, banning the zoning of fast food restaurants near schools, there really aren't many shortages of things that we can do to try to regulate the food industry's practice of misinforming consumers. It's their job to do so. It's our job to do something about it. And I'll tell you, these regulations wouldn't just benefit us, they'd also benefit the food industry. There are ethical people in the food industry. There are probably even ethical food and product manufacturers. But they are hamstrung by the fact that there is not a leveled playing field. We need to stop allowing the sorts of advertisements that I showed you up above. We need to stop allowing the food industry to target our most vulnerable and precious population, our children. We need to start doing and stop talking. And that is where we are failing. The food industry, they are doing their job. And there will be some times where profit and health collide and wonderful. But other than those rare occurrences, their job is to sell cheap calories and to sell as many of them as humanly possible. And to sit around and expect them to do something about it on their own without a level playing field is nonsense. We need to get off our own asses. We need to start pressuring people to legislate change. Because until we do, there will be lots of talking and there will be no doing. Thank you very much.
I've been enjoying this video much of the morning. Pam Colleen, welcome to the show this morning. It's Thursday morning. Pam Colleen is in the house, health and nutritional consultant, with another guest who's going to rock the boat.
Oh, is he amazing. This video is fabulous. I'm glad you were showing clips of it earlier today. But Dr. Yoni Friedhoff is with us this morning. He's from the University of Ottawa, and he's the founder and medical director of the Bariatric Medical Institute, which is dedicated to non-surgical weight management since 2004. And he has just written a brand new book called The Diet Fix: Why Diets Fail and How to Make Yours Work. And we're very, very privileged to have him on the air this morning. I know he's an incredibly busy man.
You know what? I don't want to bite the cheese out of a sandwich, but I do have to play this clip. I mean, this guy's got guts going after Coca-Cola the way he does. Tim, if we could just set this up by playing a clip we just ran, Dr. Yoni Friedhoff, the author of The Diet Fix, going after the food industry, giants like Coca-Cola.
What I think the food industry could do is stop lying. Here's an ad. Can't remember the last Coca-Cola ad targeted at children? There's a reason. And I'll read you the bottom because it's tough to read online. Parents tell us they prefer to be the ones teaching their children about beverage choices. That's why, for over 50 years, we've adhered to a company policy that prohibits advertising soft drinks to children. That's awesome. Thanks, Coca-Cola. I guess this comic book ad that says Coca-Cola Classic is always great for good sports is geared towards adults. And that this race put on by Coca-Cola for children, and they do this all over the world, isn't designed to associate the Coca-Cola brand with that kid's happiness and fun. Nor, of course, is this float from the Santa Claus parade. This float isn't designed to associate joy, happiness, Santa, with Coca-Cola? At least not to kids. No, this is for adults. And this year, for my wife's birthday, I'm going to buy her a Coca-Cola Barbie, because this couldn't possibly be geared at children. Nor could this 100-piece puzzle for ages 5+ be geared towards kids. Or this Matchbox car. Or this Lego set. Or this stuffed cute bear. These are adult toys, because Coca-Cola for 50 years has adhered to a policy of not advertising their beverages to children.
Boy, he goes after the big ones. Dr. Yoni Friedhoff, appreciate you joining us this morning.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, we're going to rock and roll here. We don't have we know that we have to let you go at the half hour, so we want to pack in as much as we can. Say hello to Pam Colleen.
Hey, Pam.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Boy,
fantastic.
He has mastered the art of sarcasm. Dr. Yoni, I hope you have lawyers going after the giants like Coca-Cola.
Well, you know, I think it's one thing to worry about lawsuits, but when you're using truth to back up your claims, I think that it's challenging to go after people. I mean, libel chill is always a risk, there's no question. But at the end of the day, pointing out the fact that there's absolutely lots of places where Coca-Cola might well be having kids face their crosshairs, I think it's fair game. I think it's fair comment. Well, and that they'll have fine print in their, you know, their edicts about what they do and don't advertise. And the fine print often refers to, you know, the audience has to have a certain percentage of kids to qualify as targeting kids. And so Santa Claus parades, I guess if there's a couple parents for every kid, there's more adults than there are kids there. So you can claim you're not targeting kids specifically.
Okay, I want to jump in and just ask you, first of all, because I think this is great. You were invited to speak to the OMA. What were you invited to speak on?
Well, it wasn't the OMA, actually. It was the OMA was invited to a breakfast, and the breakfast was for the food industry. And the OMA called me and said, would you mind coming out and supporting the OMA's message? The OMA's message at the time, they were targeting some of the products that were being sold by the food industry and suggesting that we might even be better off putting warning labels on some of these things. In any case, I remember when I was invited, I was surprised because I am rather vocal about what I feel the food industry is doing. I didn't expect to be welcome to a food industry breakfast, but I was happy to do it. And so I booked my time off. I got a flight booked. I got a hotel booked. I was ready to go. I wrote a talk. And 2 days prior to the event, I got a phone call from the OMA telling me that the food industry had uninvited me, that they no longer wanted me to come and talk to them over breakfast. And so given that I had taken the time off, I had blocked off a full day away from my patients, and I had a lot of free time, I decided, okay, well, if I can't give the talk in Toronto, I can give it online. And rather than have a room full of 50 food industry folks who likely would not care or remember my talk a little bit after I've given it, I put it online, and it's now received closing in on 300,000 views.
It's a fantastic video, and you outline some of your pet peeves in the food industry. Andy's been highlighting what you say about Coca-Cola, but maybe you want to talk about a couple of other pet peeves you have with regards to the food industry.
Well, I think in general, to be honest, I tend to point my finger more at the government than I do the food industry. The food industry is like a teenager. The food industry tries to get away with whatever it can get away with based on the current rules that exist. And so when the food industry is trying to sell food, they're ruthless about it because their only responsibility is to profit and their shareholders. It's nice to think that they care about other things, but the truth is corporations cannot have moral and ethical compasses unless they happen to coincide with profit. And so, you know, what the food industry does that pisses me off, and they do it fairly regularly, is they are deceptive in their advertising. That I don't think is cool. I think if you're going to sell sugar water, sell it proudly and don't sell it deceptively, and don't tell me that you don't target kids when you, one of your biggest mascots is a cartoon bear or Santa Claus. But the people who I think deserve the real finger pointing is a government that allows these sorts of advertisements to target children, and to, that allows the fronts of packages full of highly processed junk food, full of sugar, to have health claims on the front, leaving it up to the consumer to study the ingredients to determine if the claims on the fronts of the packages are true. That's where we're failing. You know, expecting the food industry to, you know, do the right thing is insane, but I really think we should be able to expect that of Health Canada.
Now, the World Health Organization just published information about reducing our sugar consumption, and a lot of what you say goes after the sugar industry. Do you think this is going to make a difference?
Well, I think it's going to make a difference in the fact that I think we will suddenly have a population that might understand numbers a bit better. So knowing that you're supposed to have at most, depending on which of the guidelines you look at, 6 to 10 teaspoons of added sugars a day, it puts a perspective on sugars, especially if we also have a public health campaign that teaches people that there's 4 grams of sugar in a teaspoon. So one 12-ounce can of Coca-Cola, well, that's your whole day's worth of sugar. I think having that context is useful for sure. The other thing that I think will happen as a consequence, I'm hoping anyhow, we're seeing it happening in the States, is better labeling. And again, this goes back to the government, not about becoming a nanny and telling you what you can or can't have, but at the very least providing clarity for consumers. Right now in Canada, you can have sugar listed with all of its synonyms separately, which in turn makes it appear on many packages that sugar isn't the number 2 or the number 3 ingredient in a product. In the States, they're suggesting now that that shouldn't be allowed anymore, that sugar should all be lumped together, and that there should be an extra line on a nutrition fact panel that speaks to how much added sugar is put into a product. We need to make the playing field more fair. Right now, it's heavily skewed for industry. We need to provide consumers with more understanding and information so they can navigate the aisles a bit better.
Doctor, is the public getting the message? I was struck this week because we often talk about, in fact, I asked Pam Colleen many times, what's the number one health and nutrition issue? And it's simple. She answers, sugar. And we've had so many experts on saying the same thing. This week, it was dramatic to me to see on ABC News with Diane Sawyer, them announcing that Americans, the bloom is off the rose when it comes to soda drinks, that North Americans dealing with an epidemic of obesity are starting to understand that soda drinks are loaded with sugar.
Yeah, I think we're slowly seeing a bit of change. We are seeing the numbers of carbonated beverages purchased, both diet and non-diet, going down. What I'm not convinced of at this point is whether or not we're just seeing a shift in consumption from the carbonated beverages to things like sport drinks and energy drinks, because the purchase of those beverages has gone up very dramatically, much more dramatically than the purchase of soft drinks have gone down. So I'm not convinced at this point we're drinking less sugar than we were, but I am convinced that the message that sugar consumption is a specific problem is getting out there over time. That is something that's changing, and I expect we will start to see the food manufacturers responding. Whether that's a good thing or not, it'll remain to be seen. Oversimplifying nutrition is a problem. You know, the low-fat message of the 1990s led to products that were highly refined carbohydrates stuffed with sugar but labeled with low-fat messaging. Again, I worry more about, you know, what is going to fill the void in the face of the fact that we don't regulate labeling and health claims very well in this country.
Your book is called Diet Fix, Why Diets Fail, and How to Make Yours Work. Why do diets fail?
I think they fail primarily because up until now, we have associated suffering with success. That to succeed with a diet, you need to suffer. You need to undereat. You need to overexercise. You need to deny yourself foods that you enjoy. I don't think that we are built as a species particularly well for perpetual suffering in regard to food. The thing about food is that it's not just fuel. Food is a pleasure. Food is comfort. Food is the world's oldest social network. And to think that we will expect people to live with food simply serving as fuel, I think, is folly. We are told that scales measure health. We are told that scales measure self-worth and happiness and success. And all of those messagings, all of that diet centricity leads people ultimately to give up on overly aggressive approaches. I think people need to learn to live the healthiest lives that they can enjoy living, rather than the current status quo of diets, which leads people to live the healthiest lives they can tolerate. Merely tolerable lives aren't generally sustained for very long.
Jerry, you have a question. You'll have to be brief. Hello, Jerry. Let me push the button. There we go. Jerry, you'll have to be brief. Go ahead.
Okay. Can I buy your book in a bookstore?
Oh, you can buy it anywhere. It's online. It's in bookstores.
Okay, good.
And
well, I can't go online because I can't work a computer. But in closing, real quick here, I was born in the backseat of a taxi cab in the Verner's Bottling Plant in Detroit, Michigan.
Well, you're a product of the soda industry. I'm so glad that we know that. Dr. Friedhoff, the diet fix, why diets fail and how to make yours work. What is your mission? You're very, it's almost like a crusade that you have launched against the food industry. What's your goal? What's your mission?
Well, I think the mission is to help people realize that at the end of the day, information does matter. Personal responsibility does matter, but it's not enough. You know, the analogy that I use, I've cribbed from Dr. David Katz. He's Yale's head of prevention. He calls it a flood. We've got a flood of obesity. We've got a flood of diet and weight-related illnesses. So when you talk about personal responsibility in the face of that analogy, well, that would be akin to swimming lessons. And yes, of course, everybody who lives in a floodplain should know how to swim. But I think we also need to build a levee, you know, and that levees are built with lots of sandbags, not just one. Ultimately, I don't think that we have seen an epidemic loss of willpower in North America or the world over the course of the past 80 years. I think the world around us has changed very dramatically. We need to build a levee against this flood. We also need to have swimming lessons, but one is not sufficient without the other.
Now, on your website, weightymatters.ca, you have an article about this woman out in, I think it was Winnipeg, who was fined $10 because her children's lunch did not include grain. And I know you were in communication with her. Has anything been resolved since then?
So my understanding is that the school involved, so what they'd done, they had a policy where if you didn't fit Canada's food guide recommendations for your home-packed lunch, they fined you, and then they supplemented your lunch with whatever was missing. And in this case, this woman provided a very helpful homemade lunch. I think it was roast beef and potatoes and carrots. It was a really healthy lunch. But she didn't have grains like the food guide says we should be eating so many of. And so she was fined $10, and her kid's lunch was supplemented with Ritz crackers, which is just craziness.
Doctor, we have to jump in. We got about 2 or 3 minutes left. I want you to tie it all together, put it in a little box with a bow on it. What's your message?
Well, the little box with a bow is we've got to get back to our roots, where our roots is cooking with fresh, whole ingredients and not looking to the food industry, to boxes and restaurants to supplement health. As well, we need to like our lives. And so this is about, again, the healthiest lives we can enjoy. But we do need some help from the government when it comes to understanding what's going into our bodies. And we need to learn not to be so strict and literal when it comes to nutrition.
Now, you're teaching at the University of Ottawa. You're a professor, assistant professor of medicine. How are the students responding to your message?
Well, so I tend to teach students in my office. So I teach medical students and residents how to help people with nutrition and weight management. They respond great. I think that the new generation of doctors, unlike my generation and the generation before me, do appreciate that prevention is a huge part of medicine. Whereas I think the older generations, the focus was just on treatment. We need both treatment and prevention.
Does that mean when we go to the doctor's office soon, we're going to see a nutrition chart in the front hall? This is the list of foods we don't want you to eat, and right at the top of the list is sodas?
Well, given that diet and weight-related illness are the number one preventable causes of death in North America, I do hope we will see some real information being provided by doctors on nutrition, and not just the trite eat less, move more message that gets people nowhere.
That's a great message. Fantastic message. Now, what projects are you working on right now? There must be some other things in the works.
The thing that I'm working on right now that I'm most excited about is we're working here in Ontario. I've got a 3-year pilot project funded by the Ministry of Health, helping parents of children who struggle with weight. Not the kids themselves, because I worry about involving kids on their self-esteem and their body image, but with the parents directly. The kids are the passengers. I think we need to talk to the drivers.
Terrific. Dr. Yoni Friedhoff, I wish we had more time. It's been great. The book is called The Diet Fix, Why Diets Fail and How to Make Yours Work.
And I would really encourage people to go to Dr. Friedhoff's website. It's absolutely jam-packed with fantastic articles and videos, including the one you aired earlier, Andy, which I really recommend people watch. And his website is weightymatters.ca.
And what does a can of Coke do to a penny when you drop it in? That's always the story that we heard from the time I was a kid, Dr. Friedhoff. Was that one of the legends that you were raised with?
Yeah, that it cleans it up real nice and that it dissolves teeth. And that all may be true. Ultimately, it's drink the smallest amount of the stuff you need to like your life. But I think most of us drink more than we actually need to like life.
Well, I knew a guy who could pop 6 of them at a time. And I am not exaggerating. He was 340 pounds. He would pop 6 of them at a time. 4 firefighters carried him out of his house in a body bag in the middle of the night. So that's where that led him. So this is important advice. Dr. Friedhoff, thank you for your time this
My
morning.
My pleasure. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break when we come back. He was the president and CEO of Microsoft, so he has the credentials. Now he's preaching safe technology, and as you drive out of Byron toward Kilworth, you'll see them putting up another one of these towers. We're going to talk about wireless radiation. Even when you read the packaging that comes with your BlackBerry or your iPhone, there's a warning. Don't hold this next to your head, because it'll do very nasty things to your brains, especially if you're a child, and you don't want that to happen. Frank Clegg joins us in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
In my previous role as the president of Microsoft Canada, I witnessed the incredible benefits that can come from technology. I also witnessed, though, the risks that can happen if technology is not implemented properly. In my opinion, current guidelines that we're deploying wireless devices across Canada is a risky venture and is not safe for Canadians. I'm not saying that we should eliminate technology, but I am saying that we need to use it safer. And I don't think it's acceptable that Canada's guidelines are behind significantly countries such as China and Russia.
1032, if you'll remember on our health segment last week, we went to Green Bank, West Virginia, and talked to people who have moved there from Grand Bend, Ontario, from all over the United States, and from as far away as Europe, to get away from, Pam Colleen, to get away from...
The electrosmog in general. It's the radiation, it's the stray electricity coming from all sorts of appliances, and so on, and so on, and so on.
Pam, I have wonderful news. And this comes under the heading, if you can't trust the government. Well, our government says it's not a problem.
Mm.
Not a problem.
Interesting.
This is wonderful news. We should be giving each other a high five and a big hug. This is a terrible problem that's gone away. Our government's just announced it. An experts panel's review of Canadian safety limits for exposure to radio waves, such as those produced by cell phones and wireless devices, says there is no reason to change the existing standards, and we are fully protected.
Mm.
Do you believe that?
Not for a second, no.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What they have just said.
Yeah, and they also said thalidomide was okay as well, and they also said DDT was okay.
Frank Clegg is the former president and CEO of Microsoft Canada. Now he has a new crusade in his life, and that is to make technology safer. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
A disappointing week for you. This report, if you would explain what it is, had to be disappointing news for you.
It was disappointing, but we fully expected the report to say exactly what it said.
And the reason? Because the panel, the 8-member panel, was not exactly what you would call objective. They did not come looking for the truth. 4 of them came looking for ways to protect the industry they're part of.
Well, there's even some amazing quotes that come right from the industry handbook in some of the reports. I will say there's one point, though, that I want to make sure that your audience understands that they did talk about electrosensitivity, and they did recommend that Health Canada pursue that. That was encouraging news for us, and I think it was a surprise to Health Canada.
Well, let's start right there. Let's start with the positive. Last week, one of the three people we had on, we had 2 people on from West Virginia, and they've gone to this small place in the U.S. which has no microwave towers, no cell phones allowed, and they're safe from this wireless radiation. These are folks, about some say 3%, 5%, 8% of the population has this hypersensitivity. One of them was an airline pilot who's left the airline industry. She lived in London, had to move to Grand Bend, and now they've built towers there. She is suffering. Tell me, what is this sensitivity? Who has it, and what is it a sensitivity to?
Well, it's a sensitivity to the radiation. I guess the best way to explain it is sometimes when some people can smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day and other people and not have an impact, and other people get cancer from secondhand smoke. We haven't yet figured out why. Radiation sensitivity is the same way. Some people could sit and put their cell phones to their ear for their lives, and other people can't even be within 10 feet of them. We don't know the why of it. We know that the electrons or the body at the DNA level, at the cellular level, does have an impact. Some of us can fend it off better than others. And so the good news in this report is that this expert panel, says specifically to Health Canada, is urged, I mean, I'm quoting it, is urged to investigate the symptoms of the sensitivity.
Why do you think they did come to that encouraging conclusion?
We were part of the expert panel, went out and asked for feedback at the end of October, and we had several people that were electrosensitive show up personally, even in a room where there was Wi-Fi, and one of them had to come in and leave right away because she was feeling the impact. I think that had an impact. Like, these are human beings, right? So even though four of the expert panel members are paid by industry, they're still trying to do the right thing to a certain point. And I think, and they even say in the document, they were impacted by the presentations from the public about this condition. And I think they... Now, but the only thing that's disturbing is the second half of the sentence says, you know, if it turns out to be true. And so they say to Health Canada, go figure out what's going on, and if this condition is actually legitimate, then you should do something about it. But they at least went back, said to Health Canada, you gotta investigate and figure this thing out.
Now, in other countries like China, Russia, Italy, Switzerland, they have guidelines that are 100 times safer than here in Canada. Why is our government ignoring these as examples?
That's what we've asked for. What we've asked for, typically when you do a huge scientific review like this, you issue something called a monograph. And what that is, it tells you specifically what studies were included and why, and what studies were excluded and why. And Health Canada, in its Safety Code 6 updates, has never issued that document. And so what we're calling for is to say, okay, you do this weight of evidence thing, which says you evaluate all the evidence and then you make your determinations. Well, what did you base those determinations on? And how can we possibly believe your study? How can we accept your study? How can it be properly peer-reviewed when you don't publish what the rules are?
Frank, you want safer technology. I remember the last time we talked to you, and I'm going to ask you to do it again, just to get people's attention. List those specific examples of technology where you think we really need to build in safeguards. Can you be specific? Because these are all examples of technology that all of us use each and every day.
Yeah, I would say, okay, you start with, okay, there's two, I don't know how long an answer was, so let me try to be brief and you can ask me a question. There's voluntary devices such as your cell phone, the mobile or the portable phone, a cordless phone in your house, the Wi-Fi units you have in your house. So you have Wi-Fi itself as a router. You would have these Bluetooth devices. You have cordless, wireless keyboards and mice, game consoles. So that's the voluntary stuff you can control. We're also calling for the government to fix the stuff you can't control. So the Wi-Fi in your kid's school, the smart meter on your house, the cell tower antenna that might be on the top of your apartment building or on your street corner. So, and Wi-Fi at work. So those are the two categories, and those are some examples of the items we're concerned
with. I'm sitting in a studio. If I stuck my head out the door and I look down the hall to the south in the lobby, I see this box in the ceiling, which looks like an angry hornet because it has all these antennas sticking out. And then I look to the north at the end of the hall, and I see another one. What are those, and what could be the impact on every colleague here at the radio station?
Well, it's think of it as what it is the router that gives Wi-Fi signals. So that allows you to connect through your tablet or your laptop or even your phone now through a wireless connection. Our concern is that I've been in the technology industry my whole career. When you ask technology people to implement something, they put it to the max that it can to give you the best service and the best coverage. We know you don't need to go to the levels that they're at. So right now, in my opinion, everybody's getting unduly harmed because they've got this signal going out. It's bombarding you unnecessarily. So we're not saying get rid of the Wi-Fi in the workplace. What we're saying is get the standard down and make the manufacturer of that device put it down. I talked to somebody who has a Wi-Fi unit in their house, and they've got it set up. They have the technician come in, and it only gives Wi-Fi in their study or in their home office. It does not touch any of the other floors or the bedrooms or the kitchen. You can do that sort of thing.
If I went to our engineer right now and I asked him, what is the setting on that router in the lobby? What is the setting on that router on the in the North Hall? Would he even know?
I'll tell you what, if he doesn't know, he could find out. But I suspect... in fact, I even met you a coffee that he's put it on the max because he's, and that's not his fault, right? His job as your IT person is to give you the best service he possibly can.
He wants a good signal. That's all he's concerned about, so he doesn't get complaints.
Absolutely. So he's doing his job. I suspect if he doesn't know whether it's on channel 10 or not, up to the max, he can find out for you for sure.
I talked to someone who listened to this show and who listened to you the last time you were on, and you were saying the same thing. They went to their home router, and apparently some of them have the adjustment available and some don't, but it was cranked right up to 10. And he cranked it down to 2 and still had a very good signal. And he said, that, to me, was a wake-up call that I'm pumping this powerful signal into my 3-year-old and 5-year-old kid when I could have that signal turned right down to 1/5 of that.
And I hope he put it on a timer at night, so because you don't need the signal at night. And so when everybody goes to bed, it automatically shuts off and there's 0. So instead of being at 2, it's at 0.
Now, the last time you were on the show, you were talking about a victory, and it had to do with the towers themselves. Can you explain what that decision was based upon?
Well, what we're finding is that if we've got, I think, 2 or 3 dozen situations on our website now where we're helping people in cell tower battles. And if there's a particularly egregious one, in other words, like if it's a huge tower right by a playground or right, you know, within 100 meters of a residential community, the local folks there can organize, and what they do is they put pressure on their council, the local councils, and educate. So before even the pressure starts, they actually educate councils, because a lot of people don't understand this issue, and a lot of people don't understand they can do something about it. Because Industry Canada comes in, and the proponent will come in. So Val Rogers will come in and say, hey, you can't do anything about it. Industry Canada will overrule you, and that's not true. So we educate the local team on what they can do. So what you do is you get a motion passed in council that says, we don't support this tower. And then what that does, it causes the proponent to go back and work with the town to have either other alternative locations found. We've had towers moved. We've had them canceled outright. We've had them go to impact where several months later, the Industry Canada always rules in favor of the proponent.
But the companies putting up these towers are a little bit like our engineer. They want the best signal, so they get the fewest complaints.
Yes, that is a true statement that they want the best signal. But we've now got public documents from Bell, Rogers, and Telus, where they've accepted in residential communities lowering the radiation levels. In one case in Toronto, the Rogers deal that they've signed with the City of Toronto on Toronto property is 100 times less than Safety Code 6. Bell made a presentation in Mississauga at 10,000 times less than Safety Code 6. And Telus signed a deal out in a small community out in B.C. at that same level, 10,000 times less. So the industry's told us, you know, private, not me, other people, parents or homeowners, they say, we could take this down a lot, but I'm not going to spend the money unless my competition does too.
Frank, I appreciate that. Just hold that thought. We have to take a short break, and we'll be back with more with Frank Clegg, who wants to make technology for you and your kids and your grandkids and your neighbor's kids safer when Ottawa's not entirely sure there is a serious problem. We'll be back with Mr. Clegg in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Hey, let's face it, folks. We not only love our technology, we are absolutely addicted. I keep coming back to that figure, Pam, which I just can't believe that more people in the world have smartphones than have toilets. I mean, is that a wake-up call or what? We're talking to Frank Clegg, former president of Microsoft Canada, now the head of something called Canadians for Safe Technology. What are you trying to do with this organization, Frank? I need to push a button. There we go, Frank. I'm sorry, I had to push one little button. Talk about technology. What are you doing with your organization, Canadians for Safe Technology, Frank? What's the mission?
Well, there's two. One is to educate parents and Canadians around the potential harm and how to use the technology safely. We are Canadians for Safe Technology, not No Technology. Second part of the mission is to really work with governments, all levels of government, to make the use of technology safer for all Canadians.
I think the response that we get whenever we have you on, the number one area, sort of ground zero in this whole issue, is children in school with these industrial strength routers. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, so if you ask me of all the presentations and all the meetings I have, I would say the one I'm the most frustrated with is board trustees who I will say hide behind Safety Code 6. Now, in fairness to them, to be fair, they don't have the expertise. But what we've been trying to embolden them is to say, look, you have to do something special. There's nothing in Safety Code 6 that specially protects children. There's nothing in there. They treat children the same as adults. And the child's brains absorb more radiation. Their skulls are thinner, so that it's more penetration. Their bones are growing. So there's more radiation that penetrates the child's body, and it stays in the child's body longer. And so this is what our focus on safety on the Health Canada is to say you have to do something special for children. We've got a study that shows within 4 hours, somebody holding a Wi-Fi device on their lap that had an impact on the sperm in the body. So and we've got connections links to from a Harvard medical school professor who's linked it to some forms of autism. We've got a Yale University professor and his group that did a study. Again, these studies are all peer-reviewed, scientific published. A study from the Yale group that showed when they exposed pregnant mice to a cell phone radiation, the offspring had, if they were humans, they had ADHD-type symptoms. So we know there's a connection. Now, not all children will be affected, but school boards are putting it in for all kids. So, if you have 60,000 children in your school district and 3% of them are affected, there's 1,800 children that are going to have. Now, the problem is that nobody knows its symptoms. The symptoms could be a headache. So the parents could be going to the doctor, treating the symptoms, and getting the children may even need some medication to help them survive. And it goes back to the Wi-Fi in the school.
Now, have you had any victories in that department lately? I know we've announced a couple on the show before, Andy. We've even had a principal.
Schools.
Yeah, the private schools.
Yeah, we're having some successes. There's two or three private schools, Montessori schools in the area that get to make the decision. The only school board in the country that I'm aware of is out in B.C., out in Kootenai, B.C., and they have said zero in elementary schools and only a 25% coverage of the area in the secondary school. So they're acknowledging it. The frustration is we talk about kids. Belgium, as of March 1st, it is illegal to sell a phone or market a phone to a kid under 7 years of age in Belgium. So there are places around the world. There are one school district in Canada.
Now, to be clear, you're talking about converting over from wireless to wired, correct?
Well, even if you give, there's one simple thing you can do. You can give the teacher the ability to turn the router off in the classroom. So that you download the information onto the machine, and whatever the device is, you turn the router off. There's no exposure to the kids. They do the lesson, and they proceed. Or we've approached several school boards, and they won't even do that. So,
really?
So it's not saying you have to go and spend the money to wire. But I will tell you for sure, any new school built in Canada today should be wired. The extra money to do that is insignificant, and it's staying in front of the harm. You said at the top of the show, there's a long list of things that we took too long on. Well, let's add asbestos and tobacco to that list. Like, how many people got sick from those two things? Asbestos in schools. It took forever.
Well, we need critical voices, and we're thankful that you're out there doing this work, because otherwise, it'd be a free-for-all, I think.
Okay, real quick question from Stan. Go ahead, Stan.
Is there any evidence that this condition you were talking about here affects multiple sclerosis or fibromyalgia?
It's interesting. The symptoms can show up as MS symptoms or fibromyalgia symptoms, absolutely. And so the problem is, and what Austria did, and this is the other thing that we've asked Health Canada to consider, is they put together a questionnaire for your family physician. So when you sit down, they've got a three-page questionnaire to go through all the symptoms. Because what happens now is you go through and you have all these symptoms, and they say, well, we don't know what else it can be, MS. And so yes, we know that the symptoms are absolutely similar, and I worry that people are being misdiagnosed with MS when they could be reacting to the wireless radiation around.
Okay, we're quickly coming to the end of our program, and I just want to make sure that people have a takeaway, Mr. Clegg, and that is this: you are warning about the wireless radiation from smart meters, from cell tower antenna, from smart and portable phones, baby monitors, wireless personal tracking devices. Let's go through each of those very, very quickly. What can we do about them? Let's start with smart meters.
Well, the smart meters, what you have to do, or what the only thing you can do, is you in Ontario, you can actually go to your utility and ask them to give you an alternative to a smart meter, or you can have them move it off your house. So that you have the ability to do that. We're trying to build a group to go back to the government, because there's been some reports that show that this whole business case around the smart meters, It's falling apart. There is no justification for it. And what I'd like to pray, because right now they're going to start putting them on this grid, and they're going to be unnecessarily, again, it goes back to weight, they're going to be communicating way more than they need to. They don't need to communicate your power urges four times a second. Every 4 seconds. That's completely unnecessary.
Okay, cell towers. We're seeing a new one just west of Byron. What about those?
I think you get on our website and send us an email, and we will send you a kit that we can help you organize the folks in your area to educate your counselors and have your counselors jump in the middle of this thing and send a message to Health Canada and Industry Canada and help us raise awareness, and at the same time, put the pressure on the proponent to not put it up if it's near schools or homes.
Real quickly, cordless phones.
Just get rid of them.
Get rid of them.
Yeah, there's no way to deal with that. You can't. Those things, even if you have it in this base, it's still radiating, and it is radiating like signals. We've seen signals from cordless phones way beyond what your microwave oven does with the door closed. So those things are just a disaster. Unfortunately, they're convenient. Buy a long cord and just live with the inconvenience.
Cell phones?
Okay, don't put it to your head. Never talk to it on your head. We're seeing young ladies now put it in their bra. There's a show on Dr. Oz where a young woman feels she got a cell phone. She got cancer in her bra because of where she put her phone. And guys, don't put it in your pocket. Just get it away. Keep it away from your body. And children under the age of 7, I'll use Belgium. It's not a toy. You should not be using it. Moms, don't hand it to your child as a little pacifier. Keep it away from kids.
Baby monitors.
I don't think they should be in the room. I think you should use a video once for sure. Get it out. You don't need to see something. Yeah, I'd go on eBay and I'd buy an old-fashioned one that just does the voice and keep that unit at least 10 feet away from your child's crib.
It's all scary stuff, Pam.
Yeah, it's scary. They're putting out a new technology. It's not really tested. They're just seeing what happens. We're all guinea pigs in this experiment.
There's Dr. Blank, who's part of our advisory group. He wrote a book called Overpowered. He's got a great line in there. He said, right now we're assuming the industry is innocent until proven guilty, and we've got that completely backwards. They should be able to prove that they aren't harming people before they're allowed to.
Well, it's a cigarette science, isn't it?
It is absolutely cigarette science.
Yeah.
Okay. Frank, leave us with something hopeful. You were very discouraged by this report.
Yeah. I am hopeful. I am helpful. Health Canada is for the first time. We've been trying for 2 years to get in to see them. We've had two meetings in the last 3 months. And I think they're listening. I think they know that the whole Royal Society report was a waste of taxpayer dollars. And they do not want a repeat of that. So we had an amazing meeting Tuesday afternoon, actually, with one of the senior policy advisors to the minister. I'm optimistic, but I'm still cautious that they are listening a lot more than they were a year ago. I'd like people to go to our website, c4st.org. There's on our front page, send a letter to Minister Ambrose and ask her to really open up a transparent process. There's a whole email shtick that we'll make it easy for you to do. If anybody on the phone is, that's what they can do to help us.
One more question. Do you let your grandkids play or work with an iPad?
I do not have grandchildren. My wife and I are in a huge argument with our daughter about her iPad. she's a naturopath, and she can't find another tool that can help her when she's meeting with
the patients. World loves the iPad, and maybe they could hardwire them.
I think there needs to be pressure on Apple to hardwire it. I'm gonna win this discussion with her. She's gonna buy another tablet that can be hardwired, and she gets all the functions she needs. She can meet with her patients, and she doesn't have the risk.
Terrific. Frank Clegg, always a pleasure, always an eye opener. We thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to let people know more about our interesting topic.
Thank you, Frank. And also, again, his website is c4st.org. And I have some classes going on at the library right now. If people want to look at the times and dates, please go to my website, which is just pamkilleen.com, and click on upcoming events.
Terrific. Wow. What an hour. Thank you, Pam Killeen. 11 o'clock news on the other side. Ooh.